Hello, welcome to All About Brahma Kumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I'm a judicial officer from South Africa. We have here in the studio with us today BK Denise, Brahma Kumari Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation for the past 40 years, and she's the first sister from the West to do so. The Brahma Kumaris is a community that has existed in India for just over 77 years and has currently centers in over 120 countries. And the topic that we're going to explore right now is that of tolerance. We live in a world where there is clearly a shortage of tolerance. This can be seen in nuclear families as well as communities, schools, between members of one religion, as well as intercontinental and intercountry. And tolerance is a subject that has become quite topical. You hear expressions like, why are people so religiously intolerant, and people should be more religiously tolerant, etc. So that is the subject we want to take up today with Sister Denise. Sister Denise, very warm welcome.
Thank you.
Could you please tell us what the Brahma Kumari view is towards other religions?
Well, we have a number of diagrams that we use in our studies, and one of them is called the Kalpa tree. What the Kalpa tree shows is the relationship between all the religions, where the family of humanity is looking like a family tree. And the idea in that picture is that the seed of the human family is incorporeal God, the Supreme Soul. And then from that seed, humanity grows initially with a very small community in the earliest part of the cycle. And then as we reach into the Copper Age, the major religions and founders begin to appear on the earth. So we have the Abrahamic religions, which include Judaism, Christianity, Islam. And then on the other side, you have the sannyas religion, Buddhism, many, as we get towards the end of the tree, you have many small, sort of sub-religions or little new religions with very small, populations. So the idea is that there is all of humanity, we're all essentially brothers and sisters. Every human being has a relationship with God, the Supreme Being, and then how that expresses itself is going to vary according to which culture, which religion you find yourself in as the tree of humanity grows. Now, at the present time, the world population is gigantic. I think we're more than 7 billion. And one of the things that's happening at this time is within each of the major religions, there are many, many sub-branches, many different subsections. And as well as that, there are some new religions emerging. But mostly all the religions come back to the main founders. You have Abraham, you have Christ, you have Buddha. The populations of the world that are culturally as well as religiously loyal to one of these main ones. In India, you have Hinduism, which is different because there's no identifiable founder of Hinduism, but you have many scriptures, you have many pathways, you have the Vedanta, you have the different worship of the different deities, you have many, many pilgrimage places, you have the Shaivites, you have the Vaishnavites, you have philosophies, and everything is very integrated with the lifestyle of India. So it's different from the religions which are founded from the main prophet souls. So one of the things that Brahma Kumari says is, you know, everyone has their place, everyone has their part, and we embrace the whole. So we would say, you know, my Muslim brothers and sisters, my Christian brothers and sisters, my Jewish brothers and sisters. That means giving recognition to the different faith tradition, but not thinking that they are other, you see. Whereas what happens in the world now, people from the different faith traditions, in many cases, you find the traditions having elements which are more fanatical, and there is where you get the feelings of antagonism between the religions. Buddhism began in India. There are many stories showing Moses having been in India, Jesus having been in India. So India has been a place from ancient times where there's always been great saints and sages.
And the Dalai Lama lives in India.
And the Dalai Lama does live in India, yes. Mm. And so I think that India is special in that it has that ancient, spiritual, historical quality about it, and people from many parts of the Kalpa tree will come to India, in a sense, searching for the roots. And then we think of God, the Supreme Being, who is incorporeal, as the seed of the whole tree of humanity.
Hmm. Are people allowed to practice a Brahma Kumari lifestyle as well as follow their own religion? Because it's quite common to see people from various religions join the Brahma Kumaris for various reasons.
It seems strange that you say the word allowed. There is no policing.
Okay.
Yeah, a person who comes to Brahma Kumaris comes always from some faith tradition, some cultural and religious background, and so they I suppose absorb the elements of Brahma Kumari's teachings into what is already there with themselves. Very often we find that the Brahma Kumari's practices and the knowledge that we study enhances a person's sense of their own religion, their own culture. So it's very inclusive, and you will see people who will be very comfortable, even people who are actually priests or ministers of different religions, who are holding services within those religions, who are also meditating with us. And so there's absolutely no incompatibility there at all.
Hmm. How do, if somebody belongs to the Sikh religion, for example,
yes,
and he chooses to wear his turban, mm-hmm, to regular class.
Yes.
That is acceptable?
Of course it is. You tend to see our Sikh brothers and sisters, especially when they're here in headquarters where everybody's wearing white, they will generally wear a white turban. You know.
Okay.
But fine. If you go to any of the centers in Punjab, mm-hmm, where the Sikh religion is very strong, there you will find everyone dressed in their conventional Punjabi clothing, and you know, they will also go to the Gurudwara and they will meditate with Brahma Kumaris as well.
On a practical and realistic level,
mm-hmm.
in a meditation center, say, for example, in the United States, which is very cosmopolitan, in New York and Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
where various people from various faiths meditate together, on a human level, do they really get along?
Well, yes, I've been in New York a lot. And I see people of all different racial backgrounds, all different cultural backgrounds, all different religious backgrounds, you know, because what we learn is to see the soul. You know, a person's religious background and their religious loyalties, it doesn't change the fact that they're a human being and that they have an original connection with God. From my perspective, God will look at humanity, whether they are theists or atheists or non-theists. He will say, well, these are my children, and they're very, very varied, but they're all my children, so I love all of them equally.
What happens in a particular center where, due to various ethnic, religious, racial backgrounds, people, there's conflict, what happens then?
I haven't seen any instance of that. What I have seen is if there is any kind of conflict, it'll be a personality conflict or an ego clash. You know, one of the things that we are trying to do in terms of our spiritual practice is to become egoless. An ego is, when I say ego, it is like a kind of a mask that one identifies with. So we also call it body consciousness, and it can be that you say, I am my gender, I am my social status, I am my religion, but spirituality will say, well, that is your mask, but behind that mask, what you are is the spiritual being. But if a person forgets that and they become glued to their mask, then there can be an antagonism of, you know, ego clash, and that's a personal thing.
Within Raja Yoga, tolerance is a power. Why is
yes.
that the case?
We learn about eight powers. There are more than eight powers, but eight powers are defined specifically in one of the diagrams that we work with. And tolerance is about tolerating physical pain, emotional pain, social pain, any kind of attack that ordinarily would throw up an ego reaction or a resistance or a rejection. And so tolerance is a very beautiful spiritual power where you do not take, for example, somebody will insult you for whatever reason, but you will not take it as an insult. You will not be provoked by it. You will allow it to be whatever it is. You will not take it personally.
Okay, Denise, I'm going to interrupt you there. The define tolerance for me, because my definition of tolerance is if you're driving a typical South African road, here along comes a taxi driver who does something totally illegal, cuts in front of you, puts your life in danger, as well as his passengers and your passengers, and you, okay, you let out expletives, which you hope nobody hears, and then you think, oh, I really didn't mean that, I'm so sorry, but I'm really angry at you. In that scenario, how do you bring in tolerance?
We would bring in...
Is it a word? Is it an actual feeling? Is it a power?
It's an attitude, it's a state of being, it's a power, and there are other powers as well. And in that situation, I would really bring in what we call the power of accommodation. You see, because we find people doing things, like you say, in all kinds of situations, so we have to be able to accommodate. You know, in driving, it is said, a good driver drives defensively. So if someone comes along and does pretty bad driving, or they're under the influence of alcohol or whatever, then, you know, a good driver will anticipate it and will position themselves on the road accordingly. Mm. You know, depending on which country you're in, the driving habits vary. So if you go from country to country, you really need to get used to the local ways that people drive, and India is particularly exciting if you want to drive.
It's quite educational being on a road in India.
Yes.
But for the average person, for myself, tolerance is okay. You did this. I will not lose my temper with you.
Well, that okay. I would say that's not tolerance. That's intolerance.
Okay. Now,
because you're really holding it. Tolerance is where you are so flexible. You have like what do they call it? A shock absorber. Mm. So that the bumps and things, you can manage it. You can manage people's
bumps of life.
Yes, people's behavior, circumstances, physical pain, attacks, whatever. If you are very flexible.
What creates the buffer? What creates the shock absorber?
Well, that's what the power is. You see, something comes at you like this, it will break or you will break. But something comes at you and you're like grass, you will flex with it, and it won't really make any difference. That's tolerance power.
Really? It's very different from what the world thinks tolerance is.
Yes?
Yeah, so it gives, spirituality gives a whole different dimension on tolerance, does it not?
It does. And so when we first encounter these words of the powers we have, tolerance, accommodation, cooperation, power to face, power to withdraw, power to pack up, power to discern, power to judge, we need to really think, now what does this really mean? So we have to do a lot of cogitation and contemplation and meditating on these powers, because they're very subtle and they're not what you would initially think. And so as we progress with the study and we encounter, you see, in life, every day it's your examination hall. And so in relationships and situations with the world, with your own mind, body, whatever, your family, you have tests at every step. And what the powers are for is to be able to manage the tests very well. So, you know, very high level coping mechanisms. Sometimes they're even called weapons. Weapons that enable you to go through all the challenges of life with a lot of ease and a lot of skill. But it takes time to become really competent in the use of the powers. And it's also connected with this accumulation of what we call yoga power.
Say more about that.
Yoga power, it's very subtle, but there's an energy that you know, when you meditate, you're absorbing a certain energy from the Supreme Being, certain qualities, and then you're using that in your day-to-day life. But the idea is to absorb more than you use, so that there's an accumulation. And we find that we want to spend, as time goes by, more and more time in stillness, in silence, just absorbing, so that you find that as time goes by, you do more and more just with the power of your mind, and less on the physical, verbal level. This is something that happens slowly, slowly.
For the average meditator, how does one get to that stage that you just described? It sounds wonderful, okay? But is it realistic to say the average meditator will accumulate enough power to tolerate? The context from which I'm asking this question is human behavior. Mm. This is the area in which all of us get tested the most.
Yes.
Be it the death of somebody that you really love, you've got to tolerate that pain. Be it the disappearance of somebody you love, you've got to tolerate that pain. We're faced with intense things in the year 2013. We're faced with rejection. We're faced with acts of violence. We're faced with sudden loss, sudden sorrow that you're totally unprepared for.
Yes.
Where How do you bring tolerance into situations like that?
What I would do is really talk about the yoga power. One thing is that we learn to do everything in the company of God. You know, because if you're alone, you have to do everything by yourself. If you learn how to engage the very subtle and incorporeal being of God in your day-to-day activities, you have this presence, this very powerful energy right there with you in all these different circumstances. And it is part of yoga, means having that ability to keep that being with you, to engage the being of the Supreme Soul. This is not an average person. You start off as an average meditator, and as the tests come, well, some tests you pass, some tests you fail. If you pass a test, that's good. If you fail a test, we don't think that's very bad, because we learn from our failures. It's very much part of our practice to go over the day at the end of the day, rather like you would look back at your videotape of something you recorded and just pinpoint where you didn't handle something very well, or where you got taken by surprise, or where you overreacted. And then you really look at that, and almost as if you're the director of the play of your life, you say, well, you know, I should have done it this way, this way, this way. And these tests keep coming, and you keep on getting better at handling the tests. Mm. And the powers accumulate partly through your yoga and partly through your experience. You become skilled.
If one tolerates behavior from another human being that is negative towards you, at what point do you have to tolerate it? Up to what point? And then up to what point do you have to say, assert yourself, respond in any way if you have to,
exactly,
or leave?
We shouldn't be just limiting ourselves to the power of tolerance. There are many powers involved in your day-to-day interactions. First thing is, you need the power of discrimination. And the power of discrimination is where you evaluate exactly what is going on here. Am I in an abusive situation? Do I need to tolerate? Do I need to face? Do I need to withdraw? What exactly do I need to do here? So first of all, the discrimination, the discernment of exactly what the test is, and then how best to respond to this. And you may have a series of steps in your response. And so this is a very skillful way of dealing with life, and you become better at it as time goes by, because every day you get tested, every day you hone your skills. And when you don't do the right thing, your conscience says, hey, that wasn't the right thing, was it? And gradually you get to a point where you can catch it before you do the wrong thing. And you say, no, no, this is not a wise action. So the more subtle you become, the more connected you are with the source of spiritual power, spiritual wisdom, the more accurately you will perform. And we see that those who are very great yogis, they do each thing very well. And so we have examples of people who are really skilled, and so we can compare ourselves with those people. That is also the usefulness of Prajapita Brahma, the founder of the Brahma Kumaris, that he would demonstrate how you use the teachings in every kind of situation and test.
So here we have it, the Brahma Kumari perspective on tolerance of people of different cultures, tolerance of physical pain, and even tolerance of the inequities in one's own personality. I hope you found the episode as interesting and educational as I have. I must admit I have. Making friends with pain, I've never heard that one before. Okay, one learns something every day. We thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon. Thank you and goodbye.